five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18.
What's going on?
Is that thing working? Yeah, boy. Test 1, 2. All right. This is January the 12th, 1984.
Jesus.
Flat knowing, talking to Pharaoh Baker and Ellis Wright about stuff. Let's get started. I want,
all right.
I want you to talk more.
Well,
about
I will tell you this. I think that he has all the potentialities of becoming a great artist, without a doubt. Him, Ellis.
Yeah.
Yes. I've been exposed more than he has because I'm older.
Yeah.
As I said, I've studied, I think, under some of the great people. At least I thought they were great. And I study everybody's artwork. I think that I don't know who I like best. I just love art. Now, I like El Greco. He has one of the most unique styles. To me, than any other artist. And yet, all his figures were distorted. He would have the picture would appear that the man would be maybe 7 or 8 feet tall, and might be wearing a number 6 shoe. Then most of his paintings, they'd be painting small hand. But I don't know. Let's see. And everything I looked at, Michelangelo, his figures are distorted. When you become realistic, too realistic, I think that you destroy the creativity of whatever you're trying to do.
Yeah. Now, you were talking a while ago, the difference between the dancer, like, and the cover.
Oh, yes.
Now, you've got a vision of life that's somehow different.
Yes.
The dancer shows.
Yes.
Now, at least.
No. The cup was painted first.
All right.
Then the dancer was painted later. Now, the reason I painted it, I was just fooling around up here, marking.
Uh-huh.
And my daughter, my youngest daughter, asked me, so why don't you make a disco dance? Well, I didn't know about disco. So then I did it, you know? And then I have gone, to me, I was wasting my time, trying to prove the people, which I was stupid, I think, for trying to do this, to please them, paint something realistic that they would like.
Right.
For an example, I have a painting, Beauty and the Beast, and the reason I did this thing was because people felt that I didn't know any better, you know, didn't have any skill at all,
yeah.
And yet I was a sign painter. I painted signs for a living. I did commercial work. You name it, I did it.
Yeah.
And when I was in school, one of the things that I started to quit. You see, I was sitting between two students. I was a student. One on one side of me, he drew a tree, looked so realistic that you can take your finger, look like, and pull a bark off it. The other one, he drew his tree, a tree that I wish I could have drawn, but I couldn't. And so then I got mad, and I started to pack up my stuff. And my instructor told me, he said, don't you leave. So you're the best student I got. Then I thought he was telling me that because he was a young man. I had been in the Army, I mean in the Navy, and I had 2 sons. I was there to learn. And so he told me, he said, you go back to the studio and paint what you want. So I did. I went back there and I painted a boy on the floor by a fireplace, reading a book, and a cat. So in the midterm, we had an invitation to exhibit at Atlanta University, you know, Morehouse House and all that goes along with it, the university, Atlanta University. And what gave me incentive to paint, to keep going, I should put it that way, is that this man told me I was a student. But when we had this show, I got a Golden Star. He was a painter, and I had another one across the hall who was teaching me sculpting, supposed to be. The one who was teaching me sculpting, he walked by me. She looked at my work and she said, if she move on and fall, I said, what to do? She said, you the doctor. And he keep getting up. Other words, what I had was constructive criticism. And that's what I tried to give Ellis, is constructive criticism.
Now, one thing that you know, and I expect Ellis knows, is that a lot to being an artist is not in the hands and pushing the brush over that piece of paper. More of it's in your head and how you see things and how you can translate what you see.
Yes, feel.
No,
if you paint what you feel, you see, if I don't feel anything, I can't paint nothing. Now, I can paint a sign. That's like saying A, B, C, D, F, G, H, I, et cetera, et cetera. But now, at some time, when I paint or before I paint, I think that I have the feeling of an impregnated woman. And until whatever I'm doing or whatever I feel is birthed on paper, canvas, or what have you, then I'm in misery. I'm in pain. And then that, when I get that way, then whoever around me, I make them miserable. Now, it hurts me when I'm painting. I don't enjoy it. But when I finish and it look all right, then that's when I glory for maybe a week. Then that is done. It's like when you get a child, you raise a child, his child is grown. You say, now you done educated him, done everything you could for him, now you're out there on your own.
Yeah.
That's what I feel about my paintings. And yet I love them. I love them so much I hardly sell one,
yeah.
Even when I can.
I know, but you got a whole house full of them.
Yeah. This is a young man, he's a city manager of Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Uh-huh.
When he knocked on the door, he got $200 bills in his hand. The last time he knocked, I told him, I said, you can be back and get some more. Then come back and knock. Because I'm not hungry. I mean, I'm hungry, but I'm not starving. And it's, I don't know. And my wife, she was fascinated with my work. She loved it. And I would sell something if I got broke, I didn't need some money. And she would argue like mad. A man came and opened $450 for that one there. She don't sell it. And I thought I had $10. So it's been hanging there. It's still hanging there.
Yeah.
And that one, the cup, is one. They tried to buy it in Atlanta, Georgia, and I put on not for sale. I just showed it.
Ellis, how come you got to painting anyway?
I started out with art instruction school when I was in the ninth grade.
Yeah.
And I painted for, I started with art instruction school in the ninth grade, and I stayed with them for about 2 years, and I dropped out.
Yeah.
I got disinterested in drawing. And I went into service in 69, and I didn't pick up a pencil from 67 to 72. I got out of service in 72, and I decided I want to get back into it again. And I took it up again on the Washington School of Art, and I got disinterested in it again, and I dropped out. And I moved to Lake City in 75. And I had been hearing quite a bit about Pharaoh Baker while I was here. And I heard so much about him, I was afraid to meet him. Yeah. And I finally ended up meeting him. We were about a block from each other. And I told him I wanted to be his protege. And that's where we got started. I started back painting again.
Now, when was that? That would have been?
Last year?
Yeah.
Year before that.
Must have been year before that. I couldn't figure out who told him or how he found me.
I'm curious, who told you?
I had been seeing some of his work at the junior college.
Yeah.
And a couple of guys I was associated with told me about him. You know, I was still doing something every now and then on the side. They see my work and they tell me about Pharaoh Baker.
Were you painting then or just drawing or?
I was painting before I moved here in Lake City. I painted for maybe about a year. I was working at Metal Products. And I stayed there almost 2 years, and I got laid off. And the time that I got laid off, I put it into painting. Mm. I painted for about a year straight.
Well, tell me a little something about, you know, your background, where you was born and when and all that kind of stuff and raised.
I was born in Jasper, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I went to J.R.E. Lee High School. That's the former black school there in Jasper.
Uh-huh. Mine for smoke.
Finished in June of 68.
It's all right.
And in 68, my mama put me out the house because I didn't want to go to work. And I moved to Fort Myers, Florida, and I stayed with my sister for a while. And I left from Fort Myers, and I got involved with the Equal Opportunity Job Program there in Fort Myers, and I moved from Fort Myers to Pompano Beach, Florida. Mm-hmm. And I worked at Chris Craft boat yacht factory for a while. Mm. And got fired from there, and I moved from there to Fort Lauderdale, and I waited tables there for a while. I ended up service in the May of 69.
Yeah.
And I stayed in service for about 3 years, and I ended back up in Jasper, Florida, and from Jasper here.
Mm-hmm. God, you've been around.
Yeah, right up
there. Him.
He's seen that work.
Yeah. But, you know, I must say this. Maybe somebody will hear this. When I first started, I was in a little church over here. And I had been drawing all my life, trying to. And the amazing thing, I was looking at a fan, one of these thing you fan when you come from the funeral home. And I think it was Samson on it. And the preacher asked me if I could draw it. I told him yes. And I drew it. I didn't know anything about painting, don't get me wrong. I went out of town, I got me a 25-cent little watercolor set and a 10-cent piece of cardboard, and I painted. When I carry it back, they give me $10. I said, good, it's money not. And I've been trying to draw all my life. Because when I first started out, I drew cars, and I've been sculpting ever since I can remember, making clay dolls, and horses or whatnot. But the amazing thing, I didn't know how to cast them. And that's what I learned in school, because I've been sculpting before I went there. But then I learned how to cast. And then I start sculpting stone, carving stone. But it was too expensive, so I stuck to clay and wood.
Yeah.
But it's,
Ellis, do you expect you don't want to make a living painting? What do you want to do with the art? Have you thought about that much?
No, not in that respect. All I want to do now is bring my talent out to the fullest. That's the only thing I'm concerned with now.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I haven't really started maturing as an artist, and I haven't learned a lot of the things that I need to know to make my paintings better.
Right.
And all I want to do now is just bring my talent out to the fullest.
Excuse me for interrupting. I think this, that when one paint, if he's a true artist, you don't paint in terms of money. You paint because it's in you, you feel it, and then money will come whenever you get good enough. Because some artists worked all their life, and they never made anything. I think that Picasso was the wealthiest artist of this generation. He sold a painting for $800,000. No living artist ever got that much for a painting. I sell my whole shop for that.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. And I think that Ellis has all the potential. I'm not great. I don't ever think I will be great. The day you think you're good, that's the day you die, as far as I'm concerned. I always strive to do better. And I constantly tell him that, don't ever feel like you're great. And I have two sons, and I used to get mad with my wife when my oldest one, in fact, every baker tries to draw. I know where that. And nobody in my family ever drew but me. I asked my mama last year why I drew. She asked God. She says, like a rooster crow, the crow and the rooster, not the rooster and the crow. So the crow has to come out the rooster. So that's what she was telling me.
That makes sense.
That's what she said. And I don't know. I just do it.
Well, what are there any specific things that you've been able to help Ellis with?
Yes, I've been able to help him, I think, with his colors. He in one direction, I'm in another one. And I think that, you see, if Ellis, if I teach Ellis, he's a failure. He's not really the failure. I'm the failure. Anytime I can't teach a person something that I know, think I know, then the person's not the failure. I'm the failure. So if he fail, that means I'll fail. And the next thing, I have to tell him sometime that a house is never greater than the builder. No house is greater than the builder. But we get along fine. We share. If he got paint white or something, I don't have it. If, hey, there's over there, go ahead and use it. I got it, same thing. So we get along great. And I enjoy working with him.
And he has helped me quite a bit in color value and all, too.
Yeah, he has helped me, too. Well, sometimes I don't feel like doing nothing. He'll come out there, all right, let's go. Yes, who is it? Come in. We both,
sure, come on in.
One way or another, has been blessed because he gives me inspiration. You see, I was isolated. Nobody doing what I'm doing. And then I find somebody who's interested in the same thing I mentioned. Otherwise, we have something in common. And a lot of time I don't feel like painting, but because he's out there painting, then I go paint. You know,
yeah.
It's just, it's like, how is it? Like feeding your soul. You know,
yeah.
Inspiration to me.
When you're at home, do you paint at home as well as over here?
No, I don't do any painting at home. I work with pastels sometimes. I like to work with those, and I do some pencil sketches.
Yeah.
And maybe some charcoal. That's about the only thing I do at home. Maybe some calligraphy work I'm doing, trying that out a little. That's about it.
Oh yes, he sculpted too. I had him.
Painting I do over here.
Had him sculpting.
You got him sculpting
there? Yeah, he sculpted.
You
got
like
him. Yeah, I love it. As soon as it get hot again, I'm
gonna warm up. That stuff is cold. You put your head in cold water at 30 degrees and like that. And then when you sculptor, at least when you use clay, stuff like that, if you aren't on the outside, then you mess up wherever you're at. And when I can't go out there, then I get a pen and ink and start messing with that.
Yeah.
I'm not good at that yet, but I'm trying. I have pen and ink. I cut a block, a block print. I got a linoleum print, as you saw out there. Then I work in copper, whatever it is. I take a notion and do it. I just do it.
Yeah.
I would tell people that I look at a tree and they say, "What's wrong with it?" I say, "I see an angel in it. I see everything where I want to see, you know."
Yeah.
And they think I'm a nut. Yeah. I see a stump. I look at it. I see a head in it. I said, "Head there? Are you crazy? Well, you see." So I make the head.
That's right.
We went fishing. Crazy that we went fishing. I stood up there and I looked at some seagulls. And I made some seagulls. I carved some seagulls. Because they fascinated me. The grace, you know.
Do you see things like that, Ellis?
Yeah, I could see things in trees and things of that sort. You know. I could look at the wood grain and see different things in it. You know. I never did take up the initiative to put it into a painting. But maybe I will now. Yeah. I don't know.
You think your sort of image of what the world is like has been influenced by Pharaoh's sort of ideas about the world and his place in it? Does that make sense?
No, I don't think it has any influence over my work. It might later on, I don't know. And like I'm still trying to find my own direction as far as my technique and my style is concerned.
See,
maybe 10 years from now I might be influenced about it.
No, see, this I don't ever do. I don't try to change a student's direction. I try to help him in the direction I see that he's going and he's best fitted for. Because it can only be one Pharaoh, it can only be one him. And so why try to make him like me?
That's right. Well, I remember you talking one time that you just said right out that, you know, Ellis doesn't do things the way you do them.
He can't. But he can't.
That's right.
Because we don't think alike, we don't see things the same. It's just as many approach to art is their artist. Now, the real true artist is one of those that hadn't been pampered with, like I have, or taught. When you see a child draw, that fascinates me. I think I read one time that Picasso said that he didn't know art until he went to a kindergarten and saw those children drawing in kindergarten. When I was in school, I was asked to go. Woman was teaching kindergarten, got sick or something. I asked to go down there. Some little boy had drew a car. And he had him, it screwed up and I drew now. And I erased him. That little fellow cried all day. I asked him, I went to him, I said, what's wrong? He said, you messed up my car. And I come to find out he was the artist, not me.
I see what you mean.
Free expression. That's where it's all at. And as many approach to art as their artists. Nobody can say what's aesthetic or what's non-aesthetic. Nobody, I don't think no artist in the world, can say that this man has done wrong. Now, you have certain laws, or you got perspective, or you paint from a bird's point of view that's looking down, you paint from a moonlight view that's looking up. I think that one of the most free expresses artist that I ever read about, ever seen in reproduction of painting, was Ma Moses. She didn't have no idea about perspective. She put the house in the background as big as the one in the front.
Right.
But she was great. Hallmark card used to print her work. Because I had an invitation for the Hallmark card.
Did
you? Oh, yes. I've shown, I got work in New York, I got work in Philadelphia, I got work at the Terrot Institute. God knows what I haven't done.
Yeah.
I'm still trying.
Yeah.
The day I think I'm good, that's the day I'll die.
Huh.
Artistically, maybe not physically, but artistically I will die.
Yeah.
And I impress to anybody who I have anything to do with, don't ever think you're good. If you do, you're dead.
Hmm.
You don't be good, you just strive to do better. Art is like music and English. You never finish it. You just go far as you can and do as hard and much as you can because you never finish. You never learn it all. And the day a person thinks he knows it, that's the day he's dead.
Yeah.
Well, I worked for a fella here in a sign shop, and he was with me. This happened in 1950. He asked me, he said, you still making those statues 1 foot bigger than that? I said, yeah. He said, you a nut. Now, he had a picture. He scaled. So you can take a rule and take another picture and a piece of tracing paper and put over it.
Sure.
And you can scale it. Otherwise, you put a little square there and you can tell where the nose go, where it go here and where it go there,
yeah,
et cetera,
yeah.
Et cetera. And that's the way he done his son. Now, you call that art? I would have told him. I haven't been in his shop since. And I used to work for him. I admire him. He's one of the greatest sign painters I ever met, and I met a lot of them. I know we'll be the greatest sign painters than mine, and I know that, but I try.
Yeah. Well, Well, I think that those two pictures up there show that if you want to, you can do what people would expect, you know, art, yeah, quotes, to be like.
But I want to show you something. What you do is go in that side room when you see a painting. Bring it. I want to show you what, how different this junk. Try to be versatile.
Ellis, you still got that drive to paint now as much as you did when you first got hooked up with this?
I have more than
I think he was. Sure, he
hooked on to
something. Yeah,
you're on it now.
Yeah. Right. He hooked. Almost. Let me see what he's a. Yeah, that. Look at that.
Not your dog.
Probably Dusty.
I hardly know it was you unless you told me.
That's me. Beauty and the Beast.
You tell me about that, Miss Mingo.
Yeah.
Did you mention that?
Yeah. I just want to see which way I go. And to me, I have never finished but two pictures in my life. That one and a Madonna in the shop. I just do all I can do on them. And when I can't do no more, I quit. That's the only, no finish but two pictures.
Do you ever go back next year, the year after, at a painting that you've done long ago and say, and then change it?
No, I got one painting I done years ago. I wish I could do it again, but I can't even copy my own drawing.
Yeah.
I can draw something now, and then day after tomorrow, I can't copy it.
But I mean like a picture that you... Mm-mm. So you've never finished. Do you go back and try to finish it?
No. I've done everything I can do.
So you just can't do anymore?
No, I can. When I do all I can do with it, I put it aside and start on something else.
Yeah. But you might not complete it, consider it finished?
But as far as I'm concerned, no, it's not finished. That one, the cup, and the Madonna. And it took me 3 months to do the Madonna.
And you consider them finished?
Yeah. But then on the other hand, I have done a painting in one day was equal to everything I got. Just one day's work.
Well, what makes a painting finished and not finished?
It's when you feel like it's finished. And when you've done everything you can do with it, then you put it down and start with something else.
You're satisfied with it.
No, not really. What you feel, I've done. It's like when you raise a child, send him to college, educate him, and take care of him, and you put him out there. Now, that's all you can do. It's up to him to make whatever he wants. So when I finish a painting, when I do everything I can do, I put it down. I tell him, you know, you're on your own. I've done everything I can do.
Right. Huh. Are you that weird about finishing pictures? Do you feel like you're done when you get to where you quit? Do you think it's just...
I feel more the same way, yeah.
Yeah.
I do, like you said, I do what I can do with it at that time. And when I do that, I'm finished with it. But I do this. I look back over it and see what I could have done to make it a better picture. I'm talking specifically about portraits now, portrait painting now. And say like with that landscape too, it's things, you know, that I could have done to make it a better painting. But I just carry that over into the next painting.
I think what he's trying to say is that you prosper by your mistakes. You look at this, you say, I could have done this, but next time, then you do better.
Yeah, like you look at a picture you're doing right now, and it looks real good to you maybe, but maybe 6 months from now, you'll look back at it and say, my God, did I actually do that piece of trash?
Well, I tell you,
I have
painted signs. And that's the only thing I will. And then I go back. Now I'll go over sign. I will do that. But a painting is a work of art. The free expression. I've said all I can say with that. Then I start saying something else with another one.
Right.
See? And I've had so much. I had horrible experiences in my life. That's why my paintings, I guess, are like they are. For example, Fish, when he made mention to me how violent I was when I painted this. And then I turned right around and painted the end of the day, a woman caressing her husband. But then I had felt bad because my wife had died. And well, some of them I had to get out, you know, and I just let it went. Being an artist is not an easy task. You have frustration. I worry about my work. I love my work. And then when I can't get something right, then I'm disgusted. I bust up things. I do all kind of foolish things. You know, not nothing violent, but my wife was raking the backyard. I was in the shop doing a painting, and I said, "The hell with it! I'll tear it up and store it all over again." And she told me this: "You will get whatever you deserve because you work hard. You get it." Well, she told me before she died.
Mm-hmm. I wish I'd met her.
Well. She wasn't artistically inclined.
You sort of consider that hers then?
She loved it so much. And we had been together so long. We let it hang there.
What was her name?
Evelina.
Evelina?
Yeah. She was Evelina Owens. She married me. She was Evelina Baker.
She was an Owen?
Yeah, Owens. O-W-E-N-S.
Some relatives down there somewhere. Hey,
hell, you never mind me. I used to pay a pay the sign for a guy one time. His name was Baker. My name was Baker. He come right there. He said, "You know what?" I said, "What?" "We both Baker, aren't we?" I said, "Yeah, that's what he told me." He said, "He told me too." He said, "Well, what's the difference in us?" I told him I was born in the night. He was born in the day. Kept going. Kept getting up. I had some terrible experience in my life. I never hated anybody. And I've been done wrong, misused, abused, accused. But.
Well, you come out of the water.
Oh, yeah. I don't have to worry about too much or nothing. Because I worry now. I meant to tell you this. I told Mary when I call her, I need a letter. Now I'm gonna run out of words now. Anyway, she'll tell you.
Okay.
A character letter, you know.
Like a, yeah.
Yeah, I never been into nothing, never done nothing to nobody.
Did you tell her who to send it to, or you didn't even send it to you?
Yeah, they sent it to me. I gotta have about a 20th thing, that's when I gotta go to court, accused of something. Yeah. But I never been a violent man in my life. The only time I've had to do something was when I was in the Navy. And people told me they was fighting for their country, but I got in a jam, I was fighting for me. I was trying to save me. I forgot about the country. The country was over here and I was over there.
That's right.
Fighting for me.
Maybe 4 years. The only scrap I got in was didn't do the country all day.
Yeah. Do you know?
Army.
I can't remember when I didn't try to draw. I can't remember. I used to get whipping. We had study periods, you know. Yeah. Instead of me studying, I'd be drawing.
Yeah.
And I tried to study music. And the only thing I remember. The bass clef, treble clef, and I end up being drawing something with that. So that was a waste of time.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I want to slightly change the subject. You were talking about guitar players in the shop a while ago. Are there any good guitar players and singers around here?
I knew one, and he's dead. That man could play. I find somebody because I got three. I don't see one. Now I can't play the first note.
Yeah.
I got three. One back there, one in there, one somewhere. I don't know.
One guitar player in Jasper, I know of, and a harp player. I think he might play guitar.
Up in Jasper?
Yeah.
Who are they?
One guy's name is Peter.
I get his last name for you if you're interested. And I don't know the last name, but I know him though. I can get the last name.
Yeah, I'm interested in musicians, I'm sure.
Yeah, these guys, one of them sang some blues, and I think this other guy blows a harp and plays some blues. He used to come around, my mother used to run a jip joint, and they used to come around here.
Up in Jasper?
Yeah.
Is she up there still?
Yeah, she's still there.
What's her name?
Eileen Peterson. She live on the northwest side of town.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Juke joint, Jasper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they used to have the flows jumping.
The only thing I know, a treble clef, bass clef, half note, whole note, 16th and a 32nd. But come to play, I don't know. But I try. But all we, huh?
Musicians are like artists too. You know, a lot of musicians don't know anything about reading music, just like an artist might not know anything about.
Louis Armstrong, one of the greatest, he couldn't read any music, and he got several others like that. Mahalia Jackson, one of the greatest gospel singers that ever lived in this century, and she couldn't read one note of music.
But it was in them.
Yeah, Beethoven, he wrote it. And I read where, I think it was the Ninth Symphony, it was, he had gone deaf, was going deaf. He went and stood in the rain to feel the rain beating him, and he wrote it. He was a nut. Of course, they say I am one, too.
Probably right.
Wait a minute.
Well, let's see.
When I have friends, and sometimes, I get in a talking mood and I talk. I said, "Baby, why don't you shut up?" I said, "The reason I'm talking, because I know so much to talk about. I studied philosophy. I know Socrates. I read the Bible. So if just about anything ordinary, a person want to have a conversation, I can kind of hold an intellectual conversation. And then I observe a lot. I listen to other people, and you can tell if you talk to a person, in 5 minutes I can tell whether you know what they're talking about, whether I know what he's talking about or anything, because when he knows what they're talking about, he speaks with authority. And person talking to me don't speak with authority, and I know he's talking off the wall.
I know one thing I want to ask you, Faye.
Go ahead.
That was a foolish question.
Go ahead.
If you had to classify your art, what would you call it?
But I would call Mark the revelation of art. Because I paint in the past, the future, and the present. So I would call it, but if somebody was at me, I would tell them, I'm a revelation of the artist. So I paint both ways, as you see.
Sure.
See which way I go?
Yeah.
I paint the past, the future, then I paint that I feel.
Well, that's a good way to think of it. I'm glad I asked you.
I would say that I'm a revelation of the artist, because I paint not just what happened now. That doesn't happen. That I think going to happen, that's what happened and now.
Yeah. But your pictures are not copies of nature in any way. They're out of there. It's something that you see.
Yes.
That something might, you know, you might get ideas and stimulation, but your art is what's in you, not what's out there.
Yeah. Yeah. See, so I paint what I paint what I feel. Yeah. Give a good example. I painted a crucifixion. Mm-hmm. At least I was asked to paint one. And it took me 2 weeks before I can get my mind up. Well, when I went to paint it, I felt a nail driven in my hand. I could feel it driven in my feet. I could feel the pains in my side. And that's why I say I paint the past and the future, and I paint what I feel.
Right. Hmm. Is any of that rubbing off on Alex?
Yeah, he
I'm
get
trying
that.
To get it. If,
he
if
get
I
that.
Ever get it, I think I'll revolutionize art.
He just might. Picasso did.
I'm trying hard as I can to get it.
Picasso changed the whole art world. And it's strange about him, he and Braque painted together. Braque started Cubism. And Picasso will explore Braque's work. And I had a book, I was looking at a book, and the only way you can tell the difference between the two paintings was the name. See? That's what made Picasso famous. He'd explore anybody, take a piece of yours, piece of mine, piece of her, piece of his, and hook it all together. And then it become a Picasso.
Yeah.
And the next thing what made him famous was Gertrude Stein and a brother, I can't think of a brother's name. They were wealthy. They were Jews, American Jews, and they went to Paris. Picasso, he came from Spain. And he painted a portrait of Gertrude Stein. Gertrude Stein's friends told her, said, "This doesn't look like you." And she told him this. Said, "He's going to be famous. And whenever he gets famous, then I'll have a famous painting." And she did.
Yeah.
I tell people this when I want to sell them something. Like, hey, you're not buying anything. You're making an investment. Because as long as I live and can see and have the use of my limb, I'm going to paint. And who knows when I might become famous.
Do you hope that you will become famous, either
I would like,
living or dead?
Well, nobody, I don't think nobody likes to do anything just to be doing it. Yes, I would like to know your name.
Yeah.
I want the world to know that Pharaoh lives here. I don't think that if a person wastes his life, then I think that he's defiling the law of God. Because God put every person here, I think, for a purpose. You don't just come here and waste your whole life and not try to contribute something to society. And that's what I'm trying to do, is make my contribution to society. And perhaps, excuse me, I don't mean to say I'm prejudiced, and perhaps of the blacks. Because no black artists have really succeeded. They always had a tendency to copy. They had a bishop, old Tanner. He sent his son over there to Jerusalem. His painting looked like Rembrandt. See what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And that's disgusting to me. So I'm trying to make my mark in society. Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Now,
do you have that? Desire?
What, to be famous?
Yeah, would you like to be famous?
I guess I do, because as long as I paint, it's just naturally there for me.
When you're working on a painting, do you look at that painting just through your eyes, or do you sort of start wondering about what people 10, 20 years, 30 years from now might think about it when they look at it? Does
no.
that ever cross your mind?
No, that's I don't think that's ever come across my mind.
Huh.
I paint what I feel. Now somebody gonna come along,
yeah.
So gonna feel the same thing I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually.
Yeah. I think you're right.
Same thing will happen to him.
Yeah.
And he keep going the direction he's going.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Van Gogh. He was an artist, man at my, I guess for two reasons. He was a nut. I admire, not what goes with nut, I tell you what he did. He went with, he was ugly, so I read. And he couldn't get a woman. So he met a prostitute, and she was pregnant. And he told her, "Anything you ask me, I give it to you." She looked at him and told him, "Nut, cut your ear off." He cut his ear off and wrapped it in a piece of canvas and laid it on the doorstep. You see it in some book. He got a thing around his ear, and his brother took care. And then after he was dead, his painting was worth, I think, it was estimated at $3 million. He didn't paint too long, but only about 10 years. But then after he did, and I think he I don't know where he killed himself. Or did he, I think he committed suicide.
And killed himself. Got himself in there.
Yeah, brother took care while he paint. Well, that way I feel I'm blessed. Well, I can pick a beer can, soda water bottle, or whatever, and go buy me some paint and get back there and paint.
But before he killed himself, I think he put out more work than he put out in them 10 years.
Yeah, he did. He put him in the nut house, and when he cut his ear at St. Remus, that was the name of the hospital, and then that's where he done his last greatest.
Yeah.
He painted the Starry Night, I think it was. He painted the cypress. It looked like green fire, the way they got them twisted.
Right. Well, you read this kind of stuff too, Ellis?
Yeah. Excuse me.
No, I listen to him. I have to listen. But I saw a couple of stories on TV on
that. The amazing thing, this book gets me. I was reading that out in the Western world. I admire Michelangelo. Crazy about El Greco's work. El Greco go to Spain, to Italy, Naples, Italy, where Michelangelo was. Somebody asked El Greco what he thought about Michelangelo. Michelangelo was painting the Sistine Chapel. He didn't want to paint it. He told the Pope that, Pope Pius XII, I think it was, that he didn't want to paint it, that he would rather, he was a sculptor. The Pope told him if he didn't paint it, he'd put him in a dungeon. So he up there, messed with that thing, doing a fresco, and that you paint with wet plaster, and you don't make too many mistakes with that. But anyway, you have to paint while the plaster's wet, you know. But anyway, they asked El Greco what he thought about Michelangelo. He said, I think he's a good old man who doesn't know how to paint. Some nut went and told Michelangelo what El Greco said, so he ran him all over Naples with a razor, trying to find a man to kill him.
People were crazy back then, just like now.
Yeah. I know what happened to. I went to school, and it was a woman. Her name is Brick Savage. She's a sculptress. Did you ever hear anything about Henry Ayer?
No.
But he was a sculptor, and I got a chance to meet him at the junior college. I had a portfolio of his work back there somewhere. And what he would do, his wife died, and he said, he was an old man when he started, he said that some come to him one night, some voice told him to get up and go to sculpting. But what he'd do, he'd cut a limb off a tree, and if the part would go this way, the other part would go that way, he'd make a horse head out of it. He didn't carve the thing, he put him some eyes and then stick something on him and he's gone.
Yeah.
But I see some out. I honest to God, I don't know how in the world he can call it out.
Like what?
Tin cans and beat up and jammed together like that. Uh-huh. See? They call it folk art.
What you were talking about Dolly? Not liking his stuff?
No, that thing baked beans and...
Yeah.
Even though what got me, I didn't say I didn't like his stuff. I didn't like him because he put the... He put a big old roll of paper in the pen with a hippopotamus and put paint on the hippopotamus, ate the paint, the paper, and it made him sick. See, his paint is all right. Him! It's him when he messed up that poor hippopotamus. Yeah. Who make him pay for it?
Yeah.
Hey, people do all kind of things.
Well, what about this folk art anyway?
Well, I think that they tell you the truth. I don't know how to describe folk art because there's so many definitions of art.
Yeah.
Art is a free expression. How this thing go? Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. You see something you like that. Where's them beat up cans or no? So I don't think that I'm authority to describe folk art. Now, I would think that folk art is a needed thing, like for an example, if this is something people have been doing for generation to generation, that become folk art. Oh, I won it all my life. I won it. I won it why black people had more rhythm when they danced than white. That was years ago, but this thing changing now. And I found out this, that we suppose the black person, suppose the originator come from Africa. And I found this out, that they got a dance in Africa for when you die, a dance when one born, a dance for the rain, and when you get all them dances they hooked up there together, brother, you got something going.
You do a lot of it.
I'm telling you. I always wonder. Yeah, I always wonder. All my life, I just wonder.
Yeah.
I wondered why black people were black people and white people were white people. And I found out in the Bible that there were 12 tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel, and how they got scattered, and the language got confused. One outfit come this way, one outfit went to Africa, and they just scattered all over the world. Then I wonder why the structure of my hair is different from yours. And I find out that because near the equator, it's hot and humid. So nature provided me with a thick coat of hair to keep the sun from scorching my brain, because evidently they had a system back then to make a hat.
I guess.
I'm telling you, then the next thing I wonder, when I was young, why they do not, white people with mustache beard like colored people, not black people, whatever you want to call them, why colored people wore mustache and white people when I was little didn't. So I found that out. You see, the distance between here and here was so great, the brick monotonous. And the next thing was, is that when a black boy got a mustache, then he was considered as a man. Oh, I've read so much in my life.
Well, I've heard strange stories about why there are black people.
And yeah, I know. Let me tell you one of them.
All right.
There was a prophet. He had leprosy. No, the first one they told me was that Noah had two sons. Noah got drunk, got naked, and one laughed at him. Noah put a curse on him, he turned black. The next thing I heard, I didn't believe that. So then I went, dug further in the Bible, and I found out that he was a captain, and his name was Naaman, and he had a servant. And Naaman had the leprosy. And so he had a servant, and the servant told Naaman, I can't think of his name. I don't know if it wasn't Jeremiah. I can't think of the prophet name now. But anyway, he told him to go to his prophet and get cured. So when he went to the prophet to be cured, the prophet told him to go to the Jordan River and dip himself seven times. He dipped, and then he started to get out. And his servant told him, say, he told you seven times. When he got up, that dipped himself in the Jordan River, seven, that was on the nastiest river I understand in the world. When he dipped himself the seventh time, then he become cleansed. So Naaman tried to pay this servant. I think his name after a while. Tried to pay him, pay this man of God. He told him no. Go and praise God. Well, one of Naaman's servants turned around, went back to the prophet house, and told him that his master said, send him 30 pieces of silver and 30 changes of clothes, garment. And the prophet, God let him know it. And he told him from this day forward that the leprosy that I had will cleave your body through your generation. That's why we're white,
yeah,
according to the Bible. I don't know. I read so much in my, I don't know what to believe, what not to believe.
Those stories about things like that?
I heard them all my life.
Yeah.
and some of them make a lot of sense. When they had Sleeve started singing, "Nobody knows the trouble I see, nobody knows but you." He's sending that over there a message.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you something else. And, oh God, what this thing, back off was over there so long. Jesus, I'm messing. I get so sick of this thing, I want something. Well, that's that. You know her enough. Have you heard enough? Have I told you enough?
Yeah, I think so. I'm trying. What else is another one?
Just trying to think about all the stuff you already said.
You don't have that.